Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hello there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again. Hey, this week you want to talk about a question you get on occasion, and that is, do you help people who are of modest means? I thought what you do is mostly for people who've got a lot of money and do living trusts and the whole shebang.
Right.
But everybody, I've heard you say, needs an estate plan no matter what.
That is absolutely correct. And so if you have listened to the show for any stretch of time, yes, there are two tools that any estate planner could use. One is a will, one is a trust. And I prefer to utilize a trust. I believe it is a far more flexible instrument. So there are some maybe preconceived ideas with what a trust does and who should be utilizing a trust. But I wanted to spend some time to kind of remove some of those myths and make sure that people hear that we can help everyone and anyone. And that is really our passion and our heart. We want to make sure that every person has a really good estate plan. Because you're right, everybody needs an estate plan. An estate plan doesn't mean that you have a bunch of wealth. As a matter of fact, most people do not, right? And so therefore, the average person, I don't know what we consider average anymore, but if you own a home in this area, it's probably worth anywhere from $500,000 to $800,000, depending on the size and the exact location. And so most individuals who have a home are already on their way to being a millionaire, which is very mind-blowing for many people. But what if your house was your major or one of your only assets, and now you have a bank account with $100,000 or $50,000? Well, you need to do estate planning just like the person who has $50 million. So there are family issues. There's family dynamics. So I want to kind of pull out this concept that even though we talk a lot about utilizing a trust model, that does not mean that every person still needs an estate plan. So what would that look like? What would that look like if we don't have the millions of dollars and we would consider ourselves, quote unquote, modest means?
Okay.
So that's going to be the conversation here for a little bit, is really locking down this concept. Everybody needs an estate plan. So what if I'm not the millionaire? Then what does my estate plan look like? And so,
Thing I know I've learned through doing some of these shows with you through the years is this idea that the estate plan, the trust, the will isn't just for when you die. It's for taking care of you while you're still alive.
And absolutely.
Even those questions are very important and are addressed by these kinds of documents.
Absolutely. And a great point, because that is why everyone needs to do an estate plan. Can't tell you how many times I've talked to people and they say, well, what do you do? And I say, well, I'm actually an estate planner. And that's a nice way of me saying I'm an attorney. So estate plan, whenever I use that terminology, I've had multiple people respond to me, well, if I had an estate, I would come and talk to you. And it misses the point. It misses that exactly what you're talking about, that everyone needs to do an estate plan. Everyone needs to have legal documents to support them and protect them during their lifetime. And so estate planning does have this, I guess, perception that it happens when I die. But that's actually only one of the documents. All the other documents are for when you're living. And so we need to make sure that while you're living, you're well protected, that we have the proper power of attorneys in place. And so that's what this discussion is going to be about. Well, what does that look like for me if I don't have the millions and I have a much smaller estate value? And really, let me say this also as we're kind of opening up this initial discussion, which is determining what you need based upon what your bank account says or doesn't say is the wrong reason to do estate planning. It is a reason, but it is not the reason. So therefore, regardless of what you have, again, everyone needs to do estate planning. So I understand to where if you're on a fixed budget and there's very minimal money coming in, that it may take a little bit of time to put some money aside. Or we can talk about how payment for those services work. But the whole mindset I want to get away from is that estate planning is tied to a certain sum of money. And that really is not true. Everyone needs to do estate planning. And if you have modest means, if you don't have the millions of dollars, it still needs to be accomplished for you. And so therefore, I want to start taking a look at, well, what does it mean to do estate planning? And what are some of the different estate planning options? What are some of the thought processes that we would need to go through if we don't have a lot of finances, but yet we feel that that ping to say, okay, Paul, you've convinced me I need to do something. So what does it look like for me then?
Oh, okay, well, then what does it look like? Well, what type of plans are you considering then if you don't have a huge amount of money?
Well, and so that kind of goes back to one of the very first portions of what we were talking about, which is what are the tools? So the first thing is that our mindset needs to change from what are the tools versus what are my needs? And so if I have somebody walk into my office and say, I just want a will, then the difficult part in that conversation is getting them to communicate, well, what exactly do you need versus what document do you think we should use? Having a contractor come into your home, their first instinct is not to say, I've got a hammer and I'd like to use it someplace. So what do you think, person, that I should use my hammer on? And then I've got a saw in my left hand. So now that we're going to do remodeling, I need a saw, correct? So let me use the saw someplace. No, the first thing you do is you sit down and you talk about, what does a remodel of my house look like? Well, I want to redo my kitchen. Okay, are we going to use the exact same layout? Are we going to change counter spaces? Are we going to add an island? What does it mean? Do you want more cabinet space? Everything is about the vision and everything is about what do you need? What is your desire? But it's interesting. When we talk about estate planning, the first thing that we talk about is I need a will. Or I need a trust. We talk about the tool instead of talking about, well, let's have a real, honest conversation about where are you, what are the family dynamics, and then let's talk about your finances. And really, and honestly, when I talk to people, we talk about finances at the end of the conversation. They don't lead the conversation unless someone has some real specific tax issues or really needed to get it off their chest. Mm. But we're always trying to learn about you. We're always trying to hear your heart in what do you desire to do? What is the motivating factor that brought you into the office so that we can then reach the right conclusion on the tool? So again, we can't be the carpenter that walks in with a hammer and say, this is the tool I got, let's go to work. That's just not going to work. And so so if we think in those terms that say that, that we sit down and we have the discussion about what you need to accomplish, then that's supposed to be my skill set, which is now I can lead you to the right conclusion for the right tool. And so if we start the discussion with the tool, we've already started the conversation on the wrong step.
Okay.
And so now we ultimately do get to tools, correct? And people are interested in the tools. And so, okay, well, let's talk about a couple of them then. Well, we have a will, and this isn't going to be a long discussion about will, trust, and all the other different tools that we have, but hopefully a very high level discussion. So a will ends up being a document that can go to court and empower somebody, your personal representative, to sign on your behalf, should you die. It is only a death document. It does nothing when you're alive. Because if I die, then it's really, really hard for me to sign my house over to my kids if that's where it was supposed to go. So I need someone who legally is authorized to sign on my behalf when I'm no longer here. So think of a will as a power of attorney for when you've passed away, because when you are alive, You have a financial power of attorney. That's a part of any package. So that is a tool that everybody needs. As a matter of fact, that's why everyone needs to do estate planning. A medical power of attorney, that is a tool that everybody needs to have. So those documents, though, are only valid during your lifetime. They are only valid when you are alive. When you pass away, they automatically are void. You cannot walk into a bank after someone has died and present the power of attorney, the financial power of attorney, say, I need access to the bank account. Well, you could, but it would be called fraud, so please don't. So that is not the proper tool after someone has passed away, but it is the proper tool when someone is alive. And that those tools, the power of attorneys, are utilized to ensure that someone can assist you if you need help. So if you are unable to manage your financial affairs, if you are not having all of your thought life or your emotional life fully intact and you need someone to step in because you're forgetting things or because you're going through a rough time or you have a grave illness that you can no longer hold a pen and write a check. All of these things happen to clients all the time. So how do we protect you during your lifetime? Well, we protect you by utilizing a proper power of attorney. And that is a lifetime document to ensure that someone can have the authority necessary to speak on your behalf or pay your bills or access your bank accounts. So that's a proper tool that everyone needs. Now, if we use a will, that's a death document, and it goes through probate, and it empowers someone to sign on your behalf if we did not arrange the estate in a proper way. So if we don't have proper beneficiary designations, if we're not jointly titled, there's other ways to skip the probate process. But typically, if we have a will, that means that that is going to encounter court action in order to empower somebody to sign for your documents. So that's one tool. And actually, that is probably the most common tool in all of society to use. And we kind of, you know, it's kind of the, for lack of better terminology, it's the cheapest way to do planning. And so how do you do cheap planning? And I'm talking about the check you actually have to write to do the planning. Well, you utilize a will, and there is some validity. There's some power that it can accomplish. And you use proper power of attorneys around that. But there are potential pitfalls, which I want to talk about as we come back from the break, about what a will cannot do and why we may need to look at other instruments.
Okay, looking at plans for modest means, the subject this week on the Legacy and Faith Show. People are intrigued, Paul. They want to find out more from you. How do they get in touch with you?
Head over to my website. It's legacyandfaith.com. On the website, you'll be able to find upcoming educational sessions. You can find ways to communicate with us. And actually, you can find all of our past podcasts, over 2 years worth of podcasts, at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memorieswworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memorieswworthtelling.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, this week on the Legacy and Faith Show, looking at plans for people with modest means, and you're starting to describe some of those kinds of plans. Paul, what are they?
Yeah, so we talked about a will, and that's the most common thing that people utilize. That will is going to manage your assets as they after you've passed away. So another thing that we could do is simply make sure that everything is jointly titled with somebody, but there are some huge, huge downfalls with that. I've listened to people bring their children onto the home and that, oh, that's just going to be easy. Or I'm going to bring my my adult child onto my checking account so that someone else can write the checks. Mm. And all of those sound like really good, simple ideas, but the hidden dangers of those decisions need to be explored and talked through.
Okay,
so again,
well,
and I'll get to those, but, yeah. But first let me address this, which is this is why it is so critical to not go to a tool first and to not take what you've read on the internet as a way to do your own estate plan. Sitting down with someone, with an estate planner, that will talk about your needs and your goals and how to protect you during your lifetime, it is always the most critical step in estate planning. So if you are taking steps on your own, I really encourage you to be careful. There are a lot of pitfalls out there. So, for example, we bring on a child to a checking account, and that's for ease, right? Oh, it's just easier if little Susie is on my checking account. She can write checks. They can have access. So if I can't do it or if I need help, well, she's already there. So let's ignore for a moment that Susie is going to rob you blind. Okay, so let's assume that Susie's a good kid. All right. Now, the unfortunate part is that we've all heard stories of a child taking advantage of their parents financially. Okay, so I'm going to skip that part because emotionally we don't like to look at that one in the face. But we've all heard the stories. And as parents, we go, my child. Okay, that's all right. I'll stop there. So number one, as an estate planner, my objective is to ensure that nobody gets tempted by having access to what is yours. So let's use that terminology, that money can be a tempting thing for some people to where you don't believe that they would take something unrightfully. But it happens, unfortunately, quite often. And so, therefore, number one is that my job is to protect my client, and that's why we need proper estate planning, because proper estate planning has a far greater likelihood that the plan will actually work and that the documents will do what they're supposed to do, and you'll be protected. So, number one, if you've brought your children, adult children, onto the bank accounts, there are multiple hazards. Number one is that they may be tempted to utilize funds that are yours instead of theirs, or all of a sudden they start asking for money a lot more and they put pressure on you that says, well, you've got enough. And so what if I just pay this one bill with me of mine? Or what if I borrow money from you? And so I don't want to underestimate the power of those suggestions from outside forces, mm-hmm. even when there are children. And it happens often. They're not technically stealing, but boy, are they putting pressure on the parents. Boy, are they putting pressure to say, just help me out. And they're putting pressure on their parents to utilize their funds, the parents' funds, to help the children's gaps, or sometimes just even for vacations and stupid stuff. Mm. So we got to protect. So again, that goes back to, what are your objectives? How do we help you? Now, here's another potential concern I have with just adding children to any asset whatsoever, whether it's the checking account for ease, investments, whether it is to a house because you can avoid probate. You heard it's an easy way to avoid probate. Well, there's easier ways to avoid it.
What about putting them as beneficiaries on an insurance plan?
Well, beneficiaries are different.
That's different.
Because
okay.
They don't have ownership access.
All right.
And so what I'm concerned with is that when you bring someone onto an account, they have ownership access. They have access to write the checks. They have access to go into the bank and say, just give me $100 extra bucks. And you know, mom or dad won't know. Okay. So let's say they're perfectly honest and that never happens. Okay. Now, here's the other potential concern, which is, what if they are in a bad car accident? Well, Do they have proper insurance? Are they insured at the highest level? Do they have proper umbrella policies over them to make sure that if they run into a financial situation in their life, so again, they're not going to take from you, but now they've entered into a hard time personally. They have integrity, but it's difficult to pay their bills, or that one-time accident happens where they're driving down the road and boom, on a slippery road in the Pacific Northwest, it's their fault. Hmm. Now, I have been walking down the court halls, and I have heard this conversation with my own ears. I don't make these stories up, actually. These are real clients. These are real circumstances that have happened to real people. And so so I overheard a conversation with an attorney and his client, and she was older. She was only on Social Security, because I picked that up in the conversation. And the storyline was that her daughter ran into some financial problems. Daughter was not stealing from mom. She was being a good daughter. But she ran into a creditor problem, and someone sued her daughter. Well, because daughter was brought on to the bank account for convenience. I'm using air quotes, but you can't see me, but Mark can. Mm-hmm. So for convenience, she was brought on. Because why? Because mom didn't have a lot of money, so she's trying to take the easy way or the cheap way, or because her neighbor said or someone else said that this is what you do. And now all of a sudden, her money was fully garnished out of her bank account because the daughter is on the bank account.
Really?
And now this poor older woman who didn't have a lot of money to begin with, was living on a budget, had no financial wherewithal. Because everything was taken from her. Now, if the attorney, I didn't follow the case through, but if the attorney was worth his salt, he would have been able to get all of that back. Okay, but here's the problem. If that was a really good attorney, it's going to take him 3 months. And so now what is that poor woman doing in the in-between time? So there are these hidden dangers with bringing people onto your accounts. And this is typically not the right result. It is typically not the safest result to bring your kids onto accounts. Here's another one. When you pass away, if a child is on your account, they legally are the sole owner of that checking account. But that may have not been what the will said. The will said split it with your siblings 50-50. So now, if there's a reasonable amount of money in there, that there could be gift tax issues in order to, again, if we're having an honest child, they're going to split the money. But now they have to file a gift tax return probably because it's legally their money. Now they're writing checks, to be fair, because that's what mom and dad wanted. But now we have a hidden potential issue to where that child has to file a gift tax return because they are gifting their own money, because legally it was theirs when they jointly own that account or when they own the home. Did you file a gift tax return if you brought your children onto the home? $500,000 home, it's paid off, it's your largest asset. You go, this is brilliant. I am going to bring my kids onto my home title, and I've got two kids. Well, you just divided it by three. And I don't know what number that is. So it's about $166,000, if I'm not mistaken, which I probably am when I'm trying to do this live. But nonetheless, did you file a gift tax return when you brought your kids onto the title because you gave away your home? So it is rarely the proper move. It is rarely the proper move to just simply bring your kids onto accounts. There are too many pitfalls, and even if they're honest, there are other hidden things that may not be the right thing. So these are the things that people do in order to avoid actually sitting down and having the conversation. So I'll go back to the very first thing that we were talking about, which is you got to have a conversation with an estate planner. And we need to figure out, what is your need? How do we protect you? What are your ultimate goals? So that we can develop the right tool based upon the conversation with you, not the other way around. Not the, I've got a hammer and I'm supposed to do a kitchen remodel, so let's only do a remodel if I can use my hammer. No, we got to talk about the concept first. So therefore, in estate planning, it is the most critical step is sit down and have a conversation. So for us in our firm, if you go through one of our educational discussions. Okay, so if you give us some of your time and get some of the proper education, at the end of that educational session, you will be given an opportunity without cost. So how's that for cost effective? Without cost to make an appointment with us so that we can have this specific conversation. So if you go through the educational sessions, which are found on our website, legacyandfaith.com, there's educational sessions uploaded there. There's our past podcasts. There's ways to communicate with us. When you go through one of our educational sessions, which are intended to be interactive and conversation and thought-provoking, when you go through that, then we will give you the opportunity to take this first step, which is let us learn about you so that we can help you determine what is the proper tool. And it all starts there. Then, regardless of the bank account value, whether you have a lot or whether you have a little, we can develop a plan that is proper for you, and that is the best way to do estate planning.
Okay, plans for modest means. There are such plans, and again, go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more, to get in touch with Paul, and again, all of his services there, and you also have educational seminars there, and also a couple of years of programs.
That's right. It's been a couple of years, believe it or not.
Posted there as well, legacyandfaith.com. Well, another great edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.